I tell you, yeah, my daughter and I have had some conversations here of late. I'm a little concerned about my grandson and namesake, Eric. And I'll show you what it's all about. Here's what it's over. Let me show you a picture here. So this is their home. And how many of you have one of these old-fashioned TV antennas attached to your house? You got one of those? So here's my concern, and you tell me if I'm, you know, you tell me if I'm the one who's... My question is, and I asked her the other day, and she reacted very, very energetically. I said, why hasn't my grandson climbed up on the roof of your house yet? Am I right? I mean, you feel me, right, Josh? I mean, this is a legitimate question. I mean, the boy ought to be climbing up that tower. He ought to be sitting up on that roof all the time. I mean, now the reason that he's not, Jackie, it's true. Okay, I'm going to preach the Bible whether you like it or not, okay? It's right there, right? And so I asked her that. I said, why hasn't my grandson climbed up there? She said, no, you know, and she doesn't want him. So that's the reason he doesn't do it, because he knows she's not okay with it. But again, I think this question's still valid. Why isn't he doing that when she's not outside? She's not out there with him all the time. And so I'm a little concerned about my grandson. I'm a little concerned about that. Now look, I get that the world is different from the world that many of us grew up in, okay? I know, if you're my age or older, if you're my age, you're still young. If you're older than I am, well, you're not. But look, the world we grew up in, the America we grew up in, I get that it's a little different now. You know, I understand that, it's not the same it was. You know, but every generation has certain things that every generation has to learn to do. For example, riding a bike, all right? Every generation has to learn to ride a bike. And my father, who I love very, very much, and I miss him terribly, my father had a very simple philosophy. I'm just going to share with you how I was reared, and it probably will explain a few things. But I remember when I was, when I was about Eric's, a little younger than Eric even, he said, listen, the key to riding a bike is speed. I mean, you have to, not the drug. It's, I got some of you going, yeah. So it's, and that was Harold. He said, look, if you don't get going fast enough, and we all know this is true, we've watched children try to learn to ride. And if they don't generate enough speed, they can't stay up. The secret to staying up is generating speed. So my father, when he bought me my first bike, and I still remember, it was a Raleigh 3-speed. Now, you remember the 3-speeds? You know, back when only rich kids had 10-speeds? So he took me to this, I lived outside of a main city, Anderson, Indiana. We lived outside, kind of out in the country a little bit, but we still had a neighborhood, and in that neighborhood there was a side road that had a big hill. And this hill at the bottom had a bridge with iron rails on the side, and there was a creek that bridge was over. So my father took me to that hill, and he said, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to put you on the bike, I'm going to give you a push, and you're going to learn to steer. This is the truth. He said, you're going to learn to steer. Because you're either going to steer and you're going to hit that bridge in the middle and you're going to get across and eventually you'll stop, or you're going to wreck on the way down and you're not going to like that, or you're going to go off to the side and you're going to end up in the ditch and you're not going to like in the creek and you're not going to like that. So I did. I mean, he didn't give me a hard push. He just got me started and the hill did everything else. And I learned to steer. And suddenly I could ride a bike. Now, again, I'm not discounting safety measures. I get it. I understand that there's new understandings about concussions. But look, it didn't hurt me to ride a bike without a concussion. I don't have any side effects from that. But when I watch, I see these children today. And by the way, there is a point to this. I didn't really prepare anything, so I'm just, no. I see children today, and seriously, most of the kids that I see learning to ride a bicycle, they look like they're a member of the bomb squad. I mean, like they're going in to defuse a bomb. because they are covered. I mean, they're covered from head to toe. And I can tell you this much, and I know some of you understand where I'm coming from. If a kid had showed up in my neighborhood with all of that gear on, what we would have done to him before the bike ride ever started is far worse than any wreck he could have ever had. I mean, you just didn't do that. You know, any mother who put that stuff on her kid was asking for it. So, but again, I understand things are different now and so forth. It was kind of the similar thing. My father had I started fourth grade football, and my father had this philosophy, and he said, listen, he bought me the pads, he bought me the shoulder pads, he bought me the leg pads, he bought me the helmet. He put the helmet on my head, put the shoulder pads on my shoulders, and he did one of these, and he said, look, this is what it feels like. And then he picked up a hammer and hit me in the helmet with it. He said, that is the most pain you'll ever feel with this helmet on. So if you're going to play, hit people as hard as you possibly can. That's what he did. Now, again, I know some of you are like, now everything makes sense. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not discounting the safety. Again, I have a philosophy of safety third. That, you know. So, well, I mean, there are just a few things more important than that, but it is on the list. But I get safeties, but you know, it's sort of my dad figured this. He figured if he took the fear out of it for me and said, hey, you play as hard as you can, he figured the coaches in the game will take care of everything else. He didn't try to force me into a certain position. He didn't try to teach me fundamentals. He didn't try to coach me. He just figured if I can just make sure that you go out there and you're not afraid, then everything else will sort of take care of itself. And so if you want to see where we've gone from those days, the America that I grew up in, the America you grew up in, here's what professional football players are playing in now. Look at this. Can you see that? You see that big puffy, what do they call that, a guardian cap. So they've got this big puffy thing on their helmets now. And again, I do understand that a 280-pound linebacker running at a 4.340 generates a lot more force than it did when I was in fourth grade. I get that. But what I'm seeing is, I just really wanted you to see the new Pittsburgh Steelers quarterback. But here's the thing, you know, safety is important, but sometimes being so careful, being so safe, taking all the risk out of everything in life, that does more harm. It comes at the expense of education. See, again, my dad, I remember I think my dad had the philosophy, it's supposed to hurt if you fall off a bicycle, okay? That's your motivation to learn to ride. So if we try to take away all of the pain in life, if we try to get away, if we avoid all the pain, if we avoid all the risk, if we avoid all the things like that, you know, the avoidance of pain comes at the expense of really learning. You only really learn to do something when you're motivated to do it, and you only learn to do it by doing it. And when you do things that you already know how to do, you're not learning anything, right? When you do things that are easy, you're not learning, you're not growing, you're not becoming stronger. We become stronger when we push ourselves to the point where we can't do something, and we keep pushing ourselves, and then we become stronger, yes? But I feel like every generation, you know, that childhood is supposed to be hard in some ways. I had a Bill. I appreciate the time you spent with me this week. Bill and I got together this week, and we had lunch together, and we were just talking about some different things. And Bill, you said something that has stuck with me the whole week. I'd already been thinking about this, the lines of this, but this Bill said something. It's just four words, and he was talking about he is a scoutmaster, by the way. He's an Eagle Scout, scoutmaster, and boy, I would really encourage families to talk with him about some things like that for your young people. If that's something that you might be interested in, there's some wonderful lessons there, and I know it's not the same as it used to be, but still some really, really good. But he was talking about a father-son thing, I think it was. Well, I don't know if it was necessarily scouts, but he got there, and the fathers had already gotten there and set up all the tents. And he's like, what are you doing? The whole point is for these kids to learn to do these things, right? That's one of the reasons you do it. You don't do it for, but that's kind of our world, isn't it? That's kind of our world, where parents are doing everything for children. And here's the statement that he made. He said this. He said, kids need to struggle. Kids need it. Four words, very, very powerful. And Bill, I'll tell you what, I think it is brilliant that you are making your children walk home today. I think that is, my hat's off to you, and good for you. And I think that is, while you and your wife go to lunch, I think that is just a brilliant move. Good parenting right there. But that expression, that has stuck with me. Kids need to struggle. How many of you agree with that? Yeah, you know, because when we struggle, look, you don't grow stronger nobody grows stronger by lifting a fork, right? Nobody becomes more skilled nobody becomes stronger by working a video controller, but we do become stronger by pushing ourselves in areas where we're not strong and where we can't necessarily do things. So here's my point. So do you agree? Let me just get you on board. How many of you agree that children need to struggle? Raise your hand. See, and there's some of you, like, I'm looking at Harold Jordan down here, and he said, you know what, I've been in this church long enough. I don't play those games with you, Pastor. I know better. He's like looking around saying, don't, not too late. You already raised your hand. You know, when you're being set up. Look, so here's my next question then. So don't you also then agree that when it comes to you and I as God's children need to struggle? I mean, we're God's children, right? Struggling is good. It's good to struggle. Struggling is, in fact, I'll mention this later. I think sometimes we think of struggling, we think that struggling is the same as suffering. Well, struggling's not suffering, folks. It's really not. You know, and I'll get to some scripture here in just a minute, but there's this generation that Tom Brokaw made it very, very famous, I think. He called the World War II generation, those who fought in World War II, that era. He said that is he called them the greatest generation. How many of you remember hearing him say that or hearing him talk about that? And I would wholeheartedly agree with that. I mean, I think that's certainly, of course, I personally think that anybody who goes to war I already think they're all great people. But he said this is the greatest generation. But I do believe they have one flaw that I am aware of, and that is the generation who first started saying something like this: I don't want my children to struggle like I did. And that was a really, really detrimental philosophy. And it totally well-meaning, and I think we all feel that way. Look, none of us like to see our children suffer or struggle. None of us want to see our children struggle. But it's good for them. I think about some of you moms. I watch, some of you moms. You can't stand it at when we do Easter because we have an Easter egg hunt, and you're not out there to help your child find the eggs. Children need to struggle. Struggling is good. That sort of philosophy stuck, and so every successive generation sort of adopted that concept. Well, I don't want my children to struggle like I did, not realizing that when we pave the way so that our children don't struggle like we struggled, then they don't grow like we grow. You with me? And so as Americans, let me just make some statements here, and again, you're welcome to disagree if you want to be wrong, but I know I don't know everything. I'm certainly not a perfect father. I get that, but I believe this is a biblical principle, which I'll get to here in just a minute, and I'll show it to you. But as Americans struggled less to make it in this world, you know, to prosper in this world, they became less dependent upon God to make it. See, when we struggle less to make it in the world, then we feel like we don't need God as much. We end up struggling, as the struggles become less. Let me say it this way: The more comfortable we are in the world, the less we need to get away from the world. The less we need to, if we don't struggle out, we're supposed to struggle out in this world. Look, we're all understand, we're supposed to be strangers in this world, yes? We're not supposed to be comfortable out in the world. The more comfortable we are in the world's systems, then the easier it is to just sort of go along, and the less we feel like we need a sanctuary to come to, the less we feel like we need to come to church and so forth. But here's the thing. What we don't realize, I think, oftentimes is that the physical struggles of the world, the physical world struggles, are also spiritual struggles. Physical struggles are also spiritual struggles. Let me show it to you. Ephesians chapter number 6. This is the passage that talks about putting on the whole armor of God. Before Paul gets to that, here's what he says. He writes under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood." That word wrestle, based on the context of this message, would you care to guess what the word wrestle actually means? Yeah, struggle. You are so smart. "For we struggle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." What Paul is talking about here, he said, look, what seems like a physical battle you're having is actually most of the time a very great spiritual battle. What you look at this person you're arguing with, your spouse or somebody like that, and you think this is about the two of you, it's not about the two of you. It is about a battle that you're having in your spirit with very, very powerful spirits of this world. That's what he's saying. So he's saying the physical, though, but the physical is where we sort of wrestle with that. God is telling us, let's say it this way, God is telling us that every good thing we might do is going to come with some opposition. It's going to be resisted. Hey, the people who have already been on this platform today leading us in worship, I promise you there was some resistance to them even being here today. And you know, I want to make more of this than it is, but Joanne Bennett was here for Sunday school this morning, and she's kind of getting sort of slowly back into things, and she has struggled with some things. You know, she was on her way here Wednesday night when her car died. First service she's been back in a while. You know what that is? That is a physical symptom of a great spiritual battle, in my opinion. You can take whatever you want. Somebody makes a decision to try to go, you know, against what I'm feeling, and I'm going to step out and I'm going to try to do something. Expect resistance to that. Parents, expect resistance if you're trying to rear your children the way God wants you to. You know, let me just prove it to you. Let me just prove to you that everything, the physical is affected by the spiritual. So let's do this. Now just think about your experience today. Now be honest. I really shouldn't say that. I realize every time I say that, that's like implying that I think you'll lie the rest of the time. That's not how I mean that. Were any of you tempted to stay home today? Some mild temptation? Any of you have some moderate to above average temptation to stay home? Come on, be honest. Anybody have some really strong temptation? I mean, you're like, it was all you could do to get here? Okay, yeah, you're not going to say that. Look, there's resistance. And so when we look around, it's not a surprise that there are some folks we would normally see here. There's always going to be resistance when we try to do something good. There's always going to be that. And, you know, and by the way, who does that mean who has already grown before you even got here? Those of you who had some resistance to going, you felt like, you could have stayed home in bed, right? Could have gone and bought some donuts and then gone back home. I was going to say read the newspaper, but nobody reads the newspaper anymore. But, you know, you could have done all those things. Could have gone golfing, could have gone bowling, could have gone done anything, gone fishing, gone to do something else. There's always going to be resistance. And anything good we try to do is like that. So here's the thing. So, you know, Satan doesn't really care what anybody does unless they're trying to do something good, right? So there's going to be resistance. It's going to be a struggle. There's going to be a struggle to try to do something good. So here's the thing. So if Satan and his minions can tempt us, if he can tempt us physically, then he can affect us spiritually. And not just us, but those that are around us. So here's the point of this whole thing. So as we go back then, as I talk about these changes in generations, every successive generation of children that struggle less physically, it turns into a greater struggle spiritually. The less physical struggles we have when we're young and become strong eventually turns into much greater spiritual struggles later on. Do you think that it's easier spiritually? Look, is it easier to be a child today, to stay safe as a child today? Of course it is. I mean, from a standpoint of, you know, riding a bike, okay? But do you think it's easier spiritually to be a child today than it was when we were kids? Parents didn't even consider, I remember being so jealous of my classmates because I was in a family that we went to a Southern Baptist church on Sunday night. And you know what happened on Sunday night when you were my age? Walt Disney. All the Disney, every night. And by the way, for those of you that are under the age of, 40, there was a time where there were only three channels. That's all you had. That's all you had. I mean, that's if you bent the ears right and you did all that stuff right. But I mean, Walt Disney World was on, and by the way, it was back when Disney was Disney, and all those movies were on Sunday night, and we would, and I knew because they'd be advertising it while my parents, what we were watching in the afternoon, and they'd be advertising, you know, one of these Disney movies that I wanted to see, and they would say, go get dressed for church. It's like, oh, man. Parents didn't hesitate to make their children go to church back when I was a kid. And I remember being a kid, and it was like church was so boring. It really was for a kid. My pastor was always old. See, you don't know how fortunate you are. You have such a young and handsome and vibrant deacon board. That's a bigger lie. That's a bigger lie than I would have told if I'd made it about me. But you know, so I get that, and I get how hard that is. But, you know, it was different then. The parents didn't struggle to take kids to church. I mean, it's just what you did. It's what you did. You didn't have to battle over, you know, go. You're not going to go see that movie. You just didn't do it. You know, and there are just things like that. You know, so it's gotten much, much different. So the concept here is about struggling. Now let me kind of make this more practical here. Struggles always end in one. Okay, so why is it so important? I got to really hurry. I've taken way too much time. Why is it so important to struggle? Because every struggle ends one of two ways. It either ends in victory or it ends in surrender. It ends in victory or it ends in surrender. You either learn to ride a bike or you just never try again. That's how it works, right? That's basically what my dad said. He said, look, I'm going to send you down a path here. You better stay on it. You know, and it ends in victory or it ends in surrender. We either decide we're going to fight until we win this victory, or we decide we're going to quit and not try. And this is how every struggle ends. And so so the Christian life is the same way. Let me ask you a question: how many of you? And again, don't raise your hand. Just let this be more of a rhetorical question. But how many of you find this book right here hard to understand? I hear it all the time. Pastor, I just don't understand the Bible. I read it, I don't understand so much of it. You're not supposed to. It's supposed to be a struggle. It's not supposed to be something that you can just read. Look, I've had people say, well, why didn't God just make it easier to understand? Why didn't God just make it so that, you know, everybody can easy? Well, because then we would read it one time and think we knew it all, and we would never struggle with it. See, the struggle is what it's all about. Working through it, studying and pondering some things. And this is, by the way, this is why I said in this reading challenge, this is why I said I want all the books have to be at least 50 years old. You know why? Because people had a vocabulary 50 years ago. They knew how to use bigger words. And a fourth grader reading that book could understand what those words were because they read those kind of words all the time. And we don't do that anymore because we read comic books and things. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a comic book. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with more modern language. But I'm just simply saying there is no substitute for struggling to try to understand something. I just recently, one of the books that I read this summer was The Scarlet Letter. I don't know how many of you have read that. Wonder, beautifully written book. Very, very deep, very, very appropriate Christian themes in that book. I would encourage you to read it, but you've got to work at it. You got to work at it. There's a lot of words in there that they're not going to be familiar with, and so forth. But the point is, this is not supposed to be an easy book to read. So now watch, and again, please take this the right way. I'm not being judgmental at all. But do you know what Christianity's answer has been to, well, I just don't understand the Bible and all that? You know what Christianity's answer has been? Keep writing ever increasingly easier to understand versions. And I'm not opposed to that. Look, I think if you don't know the stories of the Bible, get yourself a good Bible storybook and read it. Get a kid's storybook and read it. It'd be a wonderful way to learn some of the stories in the Bible. It'd be great. But understand, we're supposed to struggle with this book. We're supposed to struggle. Because when we struggle, then it challenges us and it pushes, and God can give us just what we need at that particular moment, and God can make us stronger as Christians. It's not supposed to be easy. I think about, let me just ask you a question. Can I just prove my point then? So with these ever-increasing I personally, you read whatever you want. I'm great with whatever version you choose, okay? Seriously. I personally study and read from and love a King James Version. That's what I read, okay? Now, that may not be for you, and that's perfectly fine, and a lot of the language is sort of archaic, and I get all that. Nothing wrong with something else. But here's my question. That was written in 1611. And if the philosophy of making it easier to understand means that Christians will know it better, may I ask you, do you really think that the majority of Christians know the Bible better today than the people who read it in 1611? I'm going to say probably not. I'm going to say they probably know it better than we do. You know why? Because they struggled. They had to struggle. We need to not be afraid of struggling. I think families try out churches and like it, and then suddenly there's a struggle. They don't like something that the pastor did or said, or they don't like they get in upset with a church member and somebody disappointed them, or they don't like the music, or they don't like this. And you get the idea. And so what happens? Instead of fighting I had somebody recently say to me, well, I'm looking for this particular kind of a program. You know what my answer was? So go ahead and build it. Oh, you don't want to build a program like that. You want to go find a program like that. Why don't you just stay and build one? You know what that is? That's fighting till victory rather than surrendering. I hear it all the time. People say, well, they get upset about something and I'm going to go and I'm going to find a better program for my kids or for my teenagers or for my young adults or for the women or for this and for that. And the truth is, if you look at your history, it's just a history of surrendering. It's just a history of surrendering, going from one place to another, to another, to another, to another. How about if you sit down and say, you know what, I am going to continue to fight until I win this battle, because a struggle is good. Struggles make us stronger. Struggling is not suffering. Struggling makes us strong. Surrendering just simply makes us that much more accommodating to defeat. See, the more we surrender, the more we just give up and say, you know what, I'm not going to fight with that. The more we do that, it just makes it that much easier to accept defeat. I don't know about you. I don't like to play games I can't win. I believe I can make a promise. I will never, ever in my life compete with any of you in a video game contest. Do you know why? I got no chance to win. The only possible chance I could have would be to break your fingers. Which, if you push me, if that's my only option, it's your kind of on you. Okay? If that's my only option to win, look, I will never do that because I don't want to lose. And I certainly don't want to lose spiritually speaking. I don't want to quit spiritually speaking. And please understand, I'm going to wrap this up. I get physical struggle. Look, I get physical pain. I know what that's like. I've got a brain tumor. Again, you're learning a lot, and a lot of things are making sense to you, right? I've got a brain tumor. Those of you who know very well, I've got a tumor in my brain that causes my joints to hurt, causes all kinds of metabolism problems. I have been on a 4-month trying to get my health better. I've lost 53 pounds. It's been the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I'm serious. No. That's not why I'm saying that. I need to be healthier, but it has been so hard. But here's what I have found. I think I'm better physically. I know I'm better physically. I think I'm better spiritually. I believe that the physical battle has translated in many ways into some spiritual growth as well. And so I just want to encourage you, don't be afraid of these, of struggling. You know, I get it. Here's one of the verses that really just sort of came out to me. First of all, I want to be here for you. I want to be here for my church family. I want to be healthy as I can be so I can always be here for you. And so 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul wrote this. He said, "But I keep under my body and bring it into subjection that lest by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." I used to just simply skip that verse. I knew when it was coming when I'd read. So, you know, years ago, I would just sort of skip over that chapter because I didn't like it. You know, I was like, I don't want to be reminded of that. And it's like, oh, I can't get away from that. So the point is, that is a physical battle. It's a physical struggle. But I believe that it translates into some spiritual strength. I feel stronger spiritually because of it. I can't explain it, but I want to encourage you in whatever physical struggle you've got. Look, you'll never convince me that most addictions are not as much spiritual, as much emotional as they are physical, and maybe even more. As I mentioned earlier, I will never forget Ann Lee back here. I'll never forget watching her come up those stairs. Remember that, Mauricio? She'd get to the top of that list, and she was in essence saying, I will not let this physical battle keep me from getting into that church service. And she never did. She never did. COVID killed her chances of being here. She simply could not come. But up until that point, she would battle that every single week. And she was one of the happiest people in this room, wasn't she? I remember when you first brought her, Sherry. Good for you. And I'm sorry. I know you're hurting. She's not hurting, by the way. She's good. She's good. No more wheelchairs. So, I guess here's the thing. I'm just asking. You in a struggle? Are you struggling? Is there a struggle to do something? Are you struggling to try to do something right? That's good. That means there's resistance. We have a choice. We can either fight until we get victory, or we can quit and surrender. So, you know, we can quit and go ahead and keep drinking yourself to sleep each night. That's the easy thing, by the way. Anybody can do that. But it's a spiritual battle to fight on. We can find some flaw in some church member, use that as an excuse to not be a part of a ministry anymore, not be a part of being with those people. Or, you know, husbands and wives, they can decide, well, you know what, I'm just not in love anymore. Can I just tell you, that is not a right philosophy. I'm way past time. I'm going to stop. But here, let me just say this: if you find yourself saying, well, you know, Pastor, I'm just not in love anymore. Well, you can fall in love again. You can fall in love again if you want to. But you may not want to. That's a whole different thing. That's a whole different issue. So fight or quit. But understand that struggling is how God wants it. Would you bow your head with me, please?